Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Well, I'll tell you what's so great. We got the Montana Farm Bureau Federation, their 105th annual meeting already underway downstairs here from our Montana Talk studios. We are in the top floor of the Doubletree Hotel in downtown Billings, and they are occupying both the Doubletree and the Northern Hotel. Incredible farmers and ranchers coming in from all across the state of Montana. Nicole Rolfe out of Miles City is the Senior Director of Government Affairs for the Montana Farm Bureau. And Nicole, great to see you as always.
Great to see you. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool. We want to talk a whole bunch of different public policy issues with you here this morning. But I love what you said during the break. You said, well, I'll tell you, you know, what we're going to be discussing. But really, until I hear from my members and what they, you know, believe and what they want our position to be, we need to hear from them first. And so that's a good reminder for our listeners across the state, is that when the Montana Farm Bureau comes out with a policy position, it's not just somebody sitting in an office in Helena saying, this is what we think. This is these farmers and ranchers from all across the state getting together, discussing and debating these issues.
Definitely. That's one thing I love about Montana Farm Bureau and working for this organization, is that we are a truly grassroots organization. Today and this week, our members from across the state will be getting together to discuss a wide range of issues that are affecting them in their local communities or statewide or even federally. And all of them have met earlier in September to kind of surface these ideas, put policy positions forward that their county organizations support. And now as a state, they get to discuss. And just like you mentioned, it's like we have our own kind of legislature. We've got this body that has representatives based on the size of the membership in each county farm bureau, and they get to vote on their positions. And that ultimately gives our organization positions on legislation, regulation, any kind of initiatives there might be. And if it is in our policy book, that's the position we're going to take. If it's not in there, we won't be getting involved. So it's truly grassroots.
We'll talk more specific policies after the break here, but what's the general mood so far? Just how are people feeling just in general?
Well, I think positive, anxious, and I don't know, positive, I would think, overall. You know, we've seen great calf prices, but then the anxiety comes in with the continued drought we're seeing. That varies across the state a little bit. But, you know, we had quite a bit of grasshopper pressure this summer, too, that was stressful on people. And we've seen kind of a mix of, you know, some calf weights were high, some were low. Wheat prices aren't too shiny, but some people had great yields, some didn't. So it's definitely a mix, but it's a farmer's prerogative to be positive and be looking forward to tomorrow. And I think that's reflected by our folks, that we've seen some changes on the federal level, and we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I can imagine there's definitely some excitement and enthusiasm about the changes coming at the federal level, because, you know, constantly our farmers and ranchers have been, you know, basically, you know, have been faced with, you know, federal overreach, waters of the U.S., and so much more. But there's been this kind of yo-yo where it's, oh, now we're going this way, now we're going that way. Maybe we can just stabilize things moving forward and support our farmers and ranchers. All right, we'll talk policy right after
I'm
this.
I'm Chad Pergram with the Speaker's Lobby. Things are a little fuzzy about the historical precedent of releasing Ethics Committee reports about former members of Congress. That became a question as the Ethics Committee was about to release a report on former Florida Representative and Attorney General nominee Matt Gaetz. The Ethics Panel was on the precipice of releasing a report investigating allegations of sexual misconduct and illicit drug use by Gaetz. The FBI probed Gaetz for years but dropped its inquiry. House Ethics Committee Chairman Michael Guest of Mississippi says the panel loses its jurisdiction and its ability to publish a report about someone once they resign. But Fox found that the Ethics Committee released information on its probe into potential influence peddling by the late Pennsylvania Congressman John Murtha. After his death, the Ethics Committee investigated former Florida Representative Mark Foley after he was caught sending inappropriate messages to House pages. Foley abruptly resigned from the House, but the ethics panel then hauled in a host of bipartisan congressional leaders for closed-door depositions to determine what they may have known about Foley's activities. With the Speaker's Lobby, Chad Pergram, Fox News.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman. With partly to mostly sunny skies across the area for today. High temperature readings will stay from the lower 30s in Bozeman to about 40 in the Billings area. For tonight, clear to partly cloudy. Lows near 12 in Bozeman to about 19 in Billings. And then the outlook for Wednesday calls for a mix of clouds and sunshine with highs of around 40. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
Hey, the Montana Farm Bureau Convention is underway in Billings, Montana, right downstairs from our Montana Talk studios. So I think we might have some pretty cool guests come up and join us on the show. Well, I know we'll have at least one. Plus, we'll have John Jackson, the Joker from X, in the house with us as well. So make sure you tune in. Make sure you call in. Tuesday's Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk, and we get some cool guests along the way as well. Statewide, right here, 9 to 10 a.m.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's start with the Montana policies first, and then we can branch out into the federal policies here. Nicole Rolfe, Senior Director of Government Affairs for the Montana Farm Bureau, in studio with us here. Property taxes. Property taxes and water. Talk about two big issues to fight about right there alone, huh?
Yes, definitely. And something that, you know, we've been discussing as agriculture industry for many years. So, there's always a lot to discuss there. Obviously, these two issues have really been risen in visibility out in the entire state. And so our members, like every other citizen in the state, are pretty very in tune to proposed changes and just, you know, impacts that have happened over the last several years, and thinking about how we can protect our agriculture perspectives and our property rights and all of those things.
So as a residential property taxpayer myself, I love the idea of capping property taxes based off of the purchase price of the home instead of the value of the home. I just think it's crazy that we tax people based off of the value of your home. This is, in my book, a tax on unrealized gains. There was an effort of a couple of years ago, I think, and then they're talking about trying to get this up and running again, where they would do just that. They would stop taxing property based off of the value of the home. And I know probably a lot of farmers and ranchers would say, hey, we love that idea in theory as well. But for every action, there can be a reaction. So there was some concern that if you just willy-nilly cap something over here, that you might force a raise in property taxes over there. So I'm assuming that, what is the question that's going to be posed to your farmers and ranchers here over the next couple of days as they discuss this topic? What are they going to be looking at? What are you looking for to hear from them?
Well, first off, you're right. Property taxes are so complicated because, just as you indicated, if you do something to one class, that has a reaction to all of the other classes. So if you do something with residential, whether it's capping it or reducing the tax rate or whatever it may be, those mills have to be made up from somewhere. And so shifts can happen. What makes it even more complicated than that is that every county has a different makeup of properties. So how the shift happens is different based on every county. Then, of course, every local government has different needs. And so this is definitely one of those places where a one-size-fits-all approach can't be very effective. So that's a lot for the legislature to work through in the upcoming months. And for our members, I think they'll just be kind of considering a lot of the tax task force proposals and related items that we've heard about, concepts that are out there, and really working through a lot of the policies we see are them working through how they think those will impact them in their county. And then, as we discussed earlier, which I think is really unique, is that one person might say, well, in this county, this will be great because XYZ. And then that gives another farmer or another rancher the opportunity to say, well, have you thought about it? Because in my county, it could look like this. And so that's why this process sometimes is known to be somewhat slow, but it's also very thorough, and it gives everybody an opportunity to get their point across and for us to all consider each other, whether we live in Ekalaka or Eureka.
Well, and I know one idea that's been thrown out, too, I think by the Frontier Institute and others, is some sort of limits on local government spending, because you're right. It's like, okay, if we lower or if we cap property taxes over here for residential, unless we limit the appetite in spending at local government level, then they're going to try to grab more from somebody else. Whereas in reality, they wouldn't need to grab more from somebody else if they reined in their own spending potentially. One of the things that I know has come up at the Stock Growers Convention the past couple of Decembers as well is, you know, there's some pretty nice real estate out there that people are purchasing. That they're using in agricultural, you know, they're getting the tax benefits of it being agricultural land, but in reality, they're not keeping it in production agriculture. Maybe it's a trophy property, maybe it's a luxury property, but that's still good farm or ranch land that should be kept in production if they're going to benefit from the taxable value of it. Yeah. So is that something you guys are looking at trying to tackle as well? I know that could probably be a really tough third rail to tackle.
Well, you're right. That is a tough one to tackle, but it's definitely something that our folks have been talking about probably for the last at least 3 years. And it's like all property tax discussions, our members have identified ways that we might go about that, and then also through that process realized that, all right, if we treat one, how do we all agree on what is a real rancher and who isn't a real farmer, and then how do we identify them? And those devils are in the details, and I think our members will definitely be talking about that more thoroughly Wednesday and Thursday. So I'll be very interested to listen in on that for sure.
About a minute before our next break, which is an easy way to sum up the water fight or the water issue. How would you tee up the water conversation that's going to take place the next couple of days?
You know, our water is a finite resource, like you said, and there is more and more demands for it as our population continues to grow. But our right to use water is a property right, and our members are some of those water right holders. They're oftentimes senior water right holders, and we want to be able to do everything that we can to protect that natural resource and to protect our private property rights in that ownership of the ability to use the state's water.
We talk about water, we talk about taxes. God, we may have dodged a big bullet when it comes to federal taxes. I know there were concerns that the Trump tax cuts would go away. There were concerns that the Democrats, if they maintained power in Washington, would try to force the death tax back down our throats once again, which would be a major threat to farmers and ranchers. So
Yes. Hopefully
we dodged a bullet there. We'll talk about that and much more with Nicole Rolfe from the Montana Farm Bureau right after this.
This is House Call for Health. A California producer of organic carrots is recalling some of its products because of concern about E. coli contamination. E. coli is a bacteria that can make you sick or, in rare cases, even lead to death. Grimway Farms has recalled select organic whole carrots and baby carrots in varying sizes and sold under multiple brand names, including Trader Joe's and Wegmans. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the products may be associated with an E. coli bacteria contamination. The whole carrots were in stores from August through October. The baby cut and peeled carrots were sold from September through November. One death has been linked to the recall. The products are no longer in stores, but could be in consumer refrigerators or freezers. Consumers should discard the products and contact Grimway Farms website at grimway.com for more information. Or for more health news, go to foxnewshealth.com. House Call for Health, I'm Lisa Brady, Fox News.
Here's a look at your Montana weather for Billings and Bozeman, with partly to mostly sunny skies across the area for today. High temperature readings will stay from the lower 30s in Bozeman to about 40 in the Billings area. For tonight, clear to partly cloudy, lows near 12 in Bozeman to about 19 in Billings. And then the outlook for Wednesday calls for a mix of clouds and sunshine with highs of around 40. That's a look at your Montana weather on Montana Talks. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
From the Gang of Eight to the Squishy Six, who are the Squishy Six U.S. Senate Republicans that may hold off on Trump's nominees and the rest of the America First agenda? Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We caught up with Ashley Smith Thomas. She told us about the Squishy Six and much more. Download the Montana Talks app and you can get all of the show audio, all our podcasts and much more, including the chat about the Squishy Six.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordlund.
A very unexpected move out of Washington, D.C. yesterday as the Senate Agriculture Committee Chairwoman, Debbie Stabenow, a Michigan Democrat, unveiled a nearly 1,400-page farm bill proposal aimed at passing before her retirement at the year's end. Titled the Rural Prosperity and Food Security Act, it includes $39 billion in new funding to support farmers, rural communities, and nutrition programs, emphasizing climate-smart practices and disaster relief. But the release caught many off guard, underscored by the absence of reactions from farm and ranch groups and even Senate colleagues. With limited time and Republican resistance, prospects for passage of a farm bill appear very slim this year. U.S. Senator John Bozeman of Arkansas is the current ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee. He posted on Twitter, quote, an 11th-hour partisan proposal released 415 days after the expiration of the current farm bill is insulting. He added, America's farmers deserve better, end quote. Again, that's a statement from Senator John Bozeman, the current ranking member, but he will become the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee once the new Congress gets underway next year. Also, President-elect Donald Trump has yet to name a nominee for Secretary of Agriculture. We'll continue to track that here on The Report. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, Lane, I hereby nominate Nicole Rolfe to be the next Secretary of Agriculture.
Or, oh boy.
Or Zippy Duval. That's such a cool name, you know. Zippy Skippy Duval, your next Secretary of Agriculture. I feel like the Secretary of Agriculture has to have some kind of cool name, right?
Under Trump 1.0, he, you know, Mr. Sonny Perdue had a pretty cool name, too.
Yeah, very cool name. Yeah. Well, Nicole, thanks for joining us for a few minutes. I know you got to run back downstairs as the annual convention gets underway here once again. Federal issues. You and I were kind of talking, and I think a lot of our listeners agree. These next, 2 months, December, actually 2 months, really, I think people are most concerned about what the feds could potentially do. You've got a lame duck Congress. You've got a lame duck president. And usually they like to do some bad things in their last few days in office. I mean, people are concerned about a potential World War III breaking out in the next 2 months. What could they do with federal lands? It's a very concerning time. I think that's why you kind of hinted that people are a little on edge, too, as well.
Yes, you're right. I mean, we're always at this point in the year interested to see what kind of surprising things could happen. You know, there's a concern that for national monument designations last minute, also new wilderness study area nominations. Those are concerning. You know, there's a lot of them designated in Montana that were designated back in the 80s and that were supposed to be studied for 5 years. Came out that they weren't eligible for designation, but they're still being managed as a wilderness area because they're a wilderness study area. So, you know, there's a lot of things we'll be watching for, on guard for. And then, you know, Chairman Thompson has been talking about a lame duck farm bill for many years, too. So we'll see if that comes to fruition. I'm maybe not holding my breath for that, but, you know, we've certainly been keeping the pressure on to get a good farm bill, a good 5-year farm bill through the process. And that's a broken record discussion for us.
We talked Montana taxes before federal taxes. Like I said, it sounds like hopefully we've now dodged a bullet with not only President Trump, but with Republican control of the Congress. That should tell us that the death tax will not be coming back to Montana farmers and ranchers. What's the other bright side on that front from your perspective?
So there were several provisions within that 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, including the higher threshold for exemption level, I should say, for estate tax, and also 199A provision that Senator Daines has been very active at protecting. That's especially important for S-Corps, which many family farms and ranches are organized as such. There's a lot of important provisions in there that are set to expire next year. And so we've been gearing up and raising awareness on those all of this year. We hope that we will see quick action in getting those renewed and not wait till they expire and try to get them in.
And maybe even made permanent.
Yeah.
So we don't just have to have a, you know, like we were kind of joking during the break, it's the farm bill again. No farm bill, no farm bill. It's like, why do we have to always have this fight? Let's just make these tax cuts permanent and provide that permanent relief for these family farms and ranches that benefit from these Trump tax cuts. The public lands rule. Wyoming Senator John Barreso was at an event with Tim Sheehy here in Billings before the election, and he talked about this public lands rule that came out of the Biden administration. And I like the way he summed it up. No use is their preferred use. It is crazy what they're trying to do with our public lands, where they basically can make them off limits to all sorts of different uses.
That's right. It's very unfortunate. It's an ill-advised rule. We commented on it. American Farm Bureau provided comments on it, really reminding them that there are multiple uses allowed on public land, or on BLM lands, on federal BLM lands. They are that's designated by state, by federal law, and by FLTMA. And conservation is an outcome. It's not a use that should be elevated to the same as grazing or recreation or mining. So they went ahead and finalized that rule anyways. It's something that American Farm Bureau is suing the BLM on, and Travis Cushman later will be able to visit with you about that. But yeah, we saw so much federal overreach in the last several years. And it's been exhausting keeping up on the federal rulemaking that's been coming out of these agencies, especially Interior. So we hope to see things righted on a lot of on that rule and many others that make it more, you know, more. We have to have certainty for our farmers and ranchers that utilize grazing on federal allotments on all of these types of issues. So we're hoping that we can move the needle on that.
That's right. And farming and ranching is an important conservation tool, one of our most important conservation tools.
Absolutely.
Out there too. It's like my grandma used to always say when I was a kid and on the High Line, that, you know, she'd always like kind of laugh at this Earth Day concept. You know, the farmers and ranchers are the real environmentalists. Who are these other people out here who pretend to be environmentalists, you know?
Right. If we want our farms and ranches to be sustainable, that's what we do, because we're making
Americans are facing. America's listening to Fox News.
All right. Yeah, big thanks to Nicole Rolfe and also Rebecca Colnar in the house helping out. She's lining up some folks to come join us on the show. In fact, Nicole referenced it later on in the 9 o'clock hour, around 9:40 this morning. So in about 2 hours, we're going to have Travis Cushman. Travis Cushman is the general counsel, basically the top lawyer for the American Farm Bureau Federation. So some of those issues that we just touched on, this public lands rule, things like that, he's going to be able to really dive into detail on where that public lands rule sits right now and what it will take to undo it and to bring it to a halt with the incoming Trump administration when the sheriff comes back to town in January. But also the broader conversation that I want to have with Travis Cushman is in light of the Chevron decision. If you guys remember, the Chevron decision goes back to the 1980s, the early 80s, out of the United States Supreme Court. Back in the early 80s, if I'm recapping this right, we had a great conversation with Perry Pendley talking about the Chevron case. Back in the early 80s, the U.S. Supreme Court said, well, if there's ambiguity, if a federal agency is trying to pass a new regulation, they're trying to put a new burden onto your shoulders, if there's ambiguity as to whether or not Congress authorized that action or not, we'll let the tie go to the runner. And the runner in their original Chevron decision was, well, okay, if we don't know whether Congress passed a law or not, we'll just let the federal government agencies, well, they'll be the tiebreaker. They get to decide, which is outrageous when you think about it. Our entire, you know, United States Constitution, our entire American government was set up to rein in the government, not to allow the government to say, well, you know, if we don't know what the answer is, we'll just let you guys do something. No, it's our government was built on the idea that limited government, that they would be reined in. So now, thanks to the newer Supreme Court justices, a few of whom were put on the bench by Donald J. Trump, the United States Supreme Court recently revisited that Chevron decision here just a few months ago. And the current United States Supreme Court in their latest ruling said basically, no, unless Congress specifically authorized that action, these federal agencies can't just willy-nilly come up with new laws to say, nope, you, the American people, can't do this. No, we, the government, are going to do that. No, unless Congress authorized it, unless Congress directed them to do that, you don't get to just do whatever you want anymore. So think about how many federal government agency decisions are on the books, thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of regulations and laws. Don't do this, don't do that, we get to do this, we get to do that. But now, could be and should be.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Earlier in the 6 o'clock hour of the show, I was talking about Pete Hegseth for Secretary of Defense. And look, I think he's a great pick for Secretary of Defense, you know, an Iraq-Afghanistan veteran. He interacts with policymakers and talks policies every single stinking day. And the moment he got back from Iraq and Afghanistan, Pete Hegseth was not just fighting for his fellow veterans, but he was already talking about what we needed to do to fix the situation back in the Middle East. Anyway, I saw a great video yesterday, Jim Hansen at Jim Hansen DC on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. So you might know him as Uncle Jimbo, Jim Hansen, Uncle Jimbo. Back in the day, he had a blog called Black Five. He was part of the Black Five blog. I actually got to meet Uncle Jimbo, and Black Five was a reference to their special operations background. But anyway, I got to meet Uncle Jimbo. I was at a Soldiers Angels event down in San Antonio, about 12 years ago now, because Soldiers Angels, you know, was a great supporter of our team on the ground in Afghanistan. And so it was cool to go be down in San Antonio with this guys. I think I ended up doing a radio show from San Antonio, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, Uncle Jimbo sounding off about how Pete Hegseth is the right man for the job. I just got a message back from Uncle Jimbo. I reached out to him, said, hey, can I have your permission to share your full message on the radio back here in Montana? So I'll play that for you here in just a second. But first, I brought up the Chevron decision out of the United States Supreme Court. We'll try and talk about that in a couple hours with the general counsel for the American Farm Bureau Federation, who will be here in studio with us. And now we've got a caller on the phone lines from, where is it, Fort Walton Beach, Florida. Brian, thanks for the call. And hey, what got you listening in all the way from Florida?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Good to join you from the free state of Florida this morning.
Yeah, that's right. Fellow free state countrymen here, Florida and Montana. That's right. Well, it's great to hear from you. What's your thoughts on this whole Chevron decision and what it could mean with a Trump administration inbound?
Yeah, I just wanted to give you a call about, you know, the thing is that Montana needs to get out of that ninth district court of appeals. And I think Florida has a proven template of how DeSantis was able to accomplish that. If people wanted to read his book, it's The Courage to Be Free. He goes through it and he really explains early on, right off when he gets into the governorship, how important that was to be able to correct a lot of this ongoing legislating from the bench. So my question is, and this would maybe be a good question for Mr. Noble to cover when he's on, but how do the people of Montana go about trying to encourage that to happen? And the second question is what is the governor doing, and how can he make the most effective use of the next couple of years while we have this red wave? So that's all I wanted to say.
Oh, that's a very good question. Yeah, because all right. Yeah, thanks for the call, Brian. No, very, very good question. So you look at Florida. I mean, what has Florida Governor Ron DeSantis done? Look, he's trying to fundamentally save the entire state of Florida, right? And so, as Brian pointed out there, it's not just about you know, winning congressional seats and winning Senate seats and winning the governor's office and all these other things. It's about taking back school boards. It's about taking back our courts from the far left wackos that are running them right now. And yeah, one of these days I would love to get Florida Governor Ron DeSantis on this show to talk about exactly how he's been doing just that in Florida. Like, for example, one thing I've mentioned here in Montana is, okay, all these Republicans who love fighting their fellow Republicans more than they love fighting the far left Democrats, why doesn't somebody right now start a political action committee to take back some of these Supreme Court seats, to support judicial candidates across Montana? Why doesn't somebody start a political action committee and start getting donors and raising money to take back more of these school board seats? Billings, Montana, for example, right now still has a liberal-dominated school board. Now, we've picked up some good seats here recently, but we still have a liberal-dominated school board. We still have a liberal-dominated city council. And look at how much of the judiciary is still dominated by Democrat appointees on our state district courts. And then you mentioned the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Yeah, that's typically been a train wreck. The Trump appointees have made the Ninth Circuit better than in the past. But still, why should we be operating under a federal court system that also covers California? It doesn't make any sense, does it? Yeah, great phone call. Thanks, Brian. Here we go. This is Uncle Jimbo, Jim Hansen, on X at Jim Hansen DC, talking about how Pete Hegseth is the right man for the SecDef job.
The left is at outrage level SecDefCon 1 over the nomination of Pete Hegseth. Bottom line, Pete will do an outstanding job as Secretary of Defense, and he has my ringing endorsement. He's an extremely bright, highly educated combat veteran who is relentlessly informed on the military and national security. I've known Pete since 2007, when he was fresh off a tour in Iraq with the 101st Airborne and running Vets for Freedom. And I want to tell you a tale about the strategic mindset he showed even then as a young lieutenant. He had grasped the idea that the Iraq War couldn't be won from giant fortified bases. We had to get out and engage with the Iraqi people and empower them to form their own security. This was the Sons of Iraq, where the U.S. military taught the Iraqi military-age males how to defeat al-Qaeda and Saddam's remnants. And it worked. But before the surge could work, it had to be explained to the U.S. public and to Congress, where the Dems were trying to kill it. Pete devised a plan with Vets for Freedom to do a National Heroes Tour to cross the country in Rob Zombie's tour bus, wrapped with cool pictures of Apaches and warriors. I served as the Hunter S. Thompson correspondent in my Uncle Jimbo persona from the top military blog of the time, Black Thought. The mission of informing America was vital and taken very seriously. But I can attest there were some gonzo shenanigans as well. How could there not be, with a crew that included Marcus Luttrell, Jeremiah Workman, David Bellavia, and a bunch of other savage warriors? The biggest challenge was getting that group to accept the mantle of heroes. But Pete understood that America needed an antidote to the lies of the regime media. They needed to know the ground truth, then they could get behind a strategy to win. It started with an epic fiesta on the deck of the USS Midway in San Diego and ended with 400 combat veterans briefing their Congress critters on why we should and could achieve victory. The tour worked. The public and Congress supported our efforts, and we defeated Al-Qaeda in Iraq. One of the first victories we've had since World War II. Well, until Obama lost the peace. But then Donald Trump went back and defeated them again when they rebranded as ISIS, an effort Pete supported wholeheartedly from his high ground at Fox. Well, now he is the leader who can take that experience and understanding and use it to rebuild our military into a functional fighting force with a warrior mentality. 12 years of Obama and Biden turned it woke and broke, with a focus on pronouns and pride parades and leaders who think climate change is our greatest enemy. When the Beltway bandits ask, who the f*** this guy? I think a better question is, who the f*** you guys? The military-industrial forever war complex has become even more dangerous than Eisenhower warned us about. And Eisenhower won World War II. This other guy won nothing while worrying about critical race theory and white rage. Our military cannot be a lab for social engineering that spends the blood of our young people and the treasure of our citizens to enrich retired generals and admirals. It must be a powerful deterrent to deliver us peace through strength. You sometimes have to fight to prove that. But the goal is to stop tyrants from stepping over the line because they know they'd get a savage beatdown. President Trump understands that, and that's why he tapped Pete Hegseth, because he knows Pete can deliver.
All right, there you go. Well said by Uncle Jimbo, Jim Hansen, formerly of Black5.net. You can follow him on X at Jim Hansen DC. If you want to find that video, go to x.com/Aaron Flint, and you should see it. It's not too far down on my timeline there, but well said. That's all the nomination speech you need for a Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. Quick break. We'll get to your phone calls and more right after this.
Being a marketer is no sweat. You just have to manage dozens of channels, launch hundreds of campaigns, score thousands of leads, and okay, fine, it's a lot of sweat. Unless you have HubSpot's AI-powered marketing tools to help you do all that and more. Get started at HubSpot.com/marketers.
Fox News commentary.
President-elect Donald Trump strolled into UFC 309 with great fanfare, and it's not just fighters and fighting fans that love Trump. Trump fever is taking sports by storm. I'm Tommy Lahren. More next.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday. Fox Business reporters, anchors, and hosts will bring you beneath the stock market speculation and boardroom drama to tell you about the biggest business stories of today. Whether you're on Main Street or Wall Street, Fox Business is invested in you.
Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Donald Trump loves UFC, and UFC loves Donald Trump. There's no doubt about that. But it's not just UFC. Trump mania has taken over sports, and unlike the constant Taylor Swift cutaways, viewers and sports fans are loving it. While the MAGA hat is the gold standard of visible Trump support, the new and fresh way to show your subtle but proud support of Donald Trump is the Trump Shuffle. The Trump Shuffle is a play on Donald Trump's very specific style of dance. The little dance and what it signifies has not only gone mainstream, but also international. From the new UFC champ to the 49ers star Nick Bosa, the Trump Shuffle is catching on, and there's no denying it. But it's bigger than a dance. It's a message to mainstream media and the wardens of cancel culture that Trump supporters, conservatives, and Christians will no longer hide our beliefs for fear of backlash. I'm Tommy Lahren, and you can watch my show, Tommy Lahren is Fearless, at Outkick.com.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
This is Fox on Justice. Californians have made their message clear. They want the state to get tougher on crime. Proposition 36 passed with about 70% of the statewide vote. With the passage of Prop 36, serial shoplifters who are caught stealing three or more times can be charged with a felony. It also lengthens felony sentences for mob-style robberies that have been all over the news and social media. The measure reverses some of the criminal justice reforms passed by Californians a decade ago. And not only did Californians approve of tougher punishments for thieves, but in Los Angeles County, voters also booted out progressive district attorney George Gascon for Nathan Hochman, a former federal prosecutor who billed himself to voters as hard center.
They're all fed up with the fact that their homes are being broken into, their cars are being broken into. Store owners can't have nowhere to go now because the DA's office has told law enforcement it won't bring those cases.
Hochman has been an outspoken supporter of Prop 36, saying it'll give his office another tool to fight repeat offenders. Max Gordon, Fox Business.
The average time a resume spends on an HR manager's desk is 7 seconds, and most of them are tossed aside. Now imagine if one of those resumes belonged to Yasmin, who was
living in a shelter, juggling 3 jobs. I had to be resilient. That's something that you can't teach.
Or if that resume was from someone who
worked 12-hour shifts at the recycling company with my dad, who's 72. That taught me a work ethic that I carry with me every day.
We rely so much on a resume, yet it could never tell the full story of someone.
Growing up where I did, a lot of things could have gotten in the way of my goals. But I learned to push through, and that's what I bring to work every day.
So maybe it's time we look beyond the resume and look to grads of life. Discover new ways to develop great talent that are so much more than what's on paper. Ad Council.
Brought to you from the Hot Spring Spas and Hot Tub Company, Friends Recommend Studio.
This is where Montana talks.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's jump into the phone lines here. And then we got John Jackson, the Joker from X, joining us in the 8 o'clock hour of the show. Hopefully he'll stick around for the 9 o'clock hour as well. I know we have at least one or two guests that are going to pop in during the 9 o'clock hour. But if John wants to stick around, he can fill the gaps in between and jump in on the conversation with our guests as well. Tom in Billings on the phone lines. Tom, what's on your mind? Thanks for the call.
Yeah, good morning, Aaron. I just want to piggyback on Brian from Florida. When I ran for the House of Representatives, along with Jody Eckhart and along with Elijah Tiswell, we had school board members. We did not, unfortunately, I hate to say it, we did not get any support from the Montana GOP. We did not get support from the Yellowstone County Republican Central Committee. We needed support like that to win the races. We were put in places to basically fill a slot. But to win these races, like Ron DeSantis, you gotta push to get your school boards in. You got to push to get your local, Republicans in. And we didn't receive any support. Jody, she didn't get any support initially, and she'd be the first to admit it, from the GOP here in Montana or the Yellowstone County Republican Central Committee. They need to support us because we need to build from the ground up.
Well, they need resources to be able to do that, too, though. And thankfully, the hard workers like Jody Etchart, et cetera, got the job done, got across the finish line. But at the end of the day, these parties need the resources as well at the local level. And, that's really tragically is the thing is, like, we had this flood of out-of-state money, national money, flood into Montana and back these far-left ballot initiatives. You get a flood of out-of-state money that backs, these liberal Supreme Court justices. Now, thankfully, we got a fair justice who will be the chief justice on the Montana Supreme Court. Corey Swanson was able to pull off a victory there. despite I'm sure being outspent by out of state dollars. But I think his bio, his background working for the Attorney General's office, his background as a Iraq war veteran, I think helped him get across the finish line. But Bitigary, she was solely propped up by out of state special interest dollars. But here's the deal. When are we going to start fighting fire with fire? And that's my point, which is somebody has got to say, hey, I'm going to start a political action committee that will start going after and trying to bring about fairness and justice to our judicial system here in Montana. We've had incredible. Dan Wilson is an incredible candidate. He is an incredible judge. He has an incredible message. If more people had the opportunity to hear from Dan Wilson and hear his message, he could have won that race. But when you get flooded with out-of-state dollars, that's what happens. I also think I hope one thing the Montana legislature tackles coming up is this whole not just out-of-state money that's able to be used for these ballot initiative campaigns, but foreign money, foreign influence. You guys remember we were reporting this. I don't think anybody in the Montana media reported this news, but there was a report that got published that pointed out how foreign money was able to be spent on these ballot initiative campaigns, not just the far left ballot initiative campaigns here in Montana, but the far left ballot initiative campaigns elsewhere across the country. So how do we look at making sure that foreign influence like Hans-Jörg Wiese, this far left environmental activist, is not able to contribute to ballot initiative campaigns here in Montana? Why should a foreign far left billionaire be able to come in and interfere in our own elections here in Montana and elsewhere across the country? It's outrageous. The Joker in next.
Saving you money, I'm Hillary Barsky. Buying a vehicle at a dealership can be a stressful process, from the time commitment involved to the pressure of haggling with salespeople, not to mention test driving lots of vehicles. But there are some ways to make the process easier for you and your wallet. Be sure to call ahead to the dealership to see if the models you want to try are available. Showrooms have cut back on the number of vehicles they keep on the lot, meaning fewer options for test drives. And check price guides like Kelley Blue Book to get a sense of the range of prices for the car you desire. For trade-ins, you can visit cars.com along with Kelley Blue Book to find out how much your vehicle is currently worth. And to assist with negotiations, experts say it would be wise to run your vehicle through multiple trade-in offers. In addition to knowing car values and a fair going price, you should know your credit score and loan offers, so you know what kind of rates and terms you might be eligible for. Saving you money, Hillary Barsky, Fox News.